Alrighty, good evening, folks. We are live for the Monday night Tiger Cast. Apologies about being slightly late. I'm seeing all the comments flowing in. We were just chatting about some stats and figures and whatnot before we hit live. So good to be back on a Monday night after a very nice and very unexpected win, it must be said. Did all three of us actually tip us though? Or did we?
I couldn't tell you what I did.
I'll have to go back and look at it. I can't remember if we did it just because it was at Marvel. I'll have to go back and have a look, but I don't think any of us actually thought we would win. But yeah, it was a very, very interesting game and a very, very proud game, I think, would be safe to say for a lot of supporters. It was crazy. But before we get into that, one thing we'll get into first, one of my favorite topics every week, it has been, especially in more recent times, but we're going to get stuck in straight into the 2025 North Melbourne Death Ride chart, which is taking shape very, very nicely, folks. So North Melbourne had their fourth loss in a row, taking their grand total of losses to 5, ladder position 16th, and we've currently got their number 3 pick and our own number 4 pick. So this is going exceptionally well that they are below us on the ladder at this moment in time, and we have a higher pick at their expense and not our own. They're in a bit of disarray. I know we're a Tiger show, but they're in a bit of disarray at the moment. Old North Melbourne, aren't they, EJ? They're all lost at sea. They're pointing the fingers at each other. It's a bit grim.
Yeah, I actually thought, you know, a couple of weeks ago after the win against Melbourne, and I think they weren't too bad the following week, I thought, yep. Yeah. Oh, there you go. I did tip them, you beauty. That's what I think is my first one right all year. I actually thought that they'd turn the corner, not just with the win, but with the week after. And, you know, they were going to be all right, but they look terrible when the opposition has the ball.
Which is a concern. Yeah. Pretty important part of the game to not look terrible. I know we've had our moments as well, I guess, but yeah. They're obviously a bit further advanced in their rebuild or whatever you want to call it, and it's just not working for them currently.
Yeah. Seinfeld, that's a shame gif.
Yeah, well, that's right. And they've got Port in Adelaide this week as well.
Yeah, well, I actually tip Port to have a bit of I tip Sydney to beat Port because I thought they'd come down off their revenge game and suffer a little bit, but they looked all right. So, yeah, you wouldn't give North much chance there, would you?
No, I wouldn't have thought. So that's, going to be very interesting to see how that one plays out for them as well. But, yeah, we're tracking nicely, so it's a good one to keep tabs of. The old North Melbourne death ride chart. But we'll get stuck into our game because, believe it or not, EJ, we are, as it sits right now tonight, we are one game outside the 8. Can you believe it? I mean, if we had have even remotely discussed this as a possible concept after the first 6 rounds, it would have been unheard of and would have been laughed out of town. And probably rightly so, to be honest. But it's... Yeah, here we are, 2-6. And the one thing that's struck me before we start talking about the game itself is if you look at the first 6 games of our fixture, they're actually really difficult games, not just for us as a lower-ranked side, but any side playing it. You've got Carlton, who are meant to be top 4, top 6, and we weren't to know they were going to shit the bed in round 1. Port Adelaide, who are meant to be top 4, Frio, top 4, top 6, Brisbane, the reigning premiers, St Kilda on the up-and-up and probably pushing for top 8, and then Gold Coast were undefeated and probably pushing for top 8 or top 6 as well. So that's kind of as tough as it gets, really, to start your season, and we've jagged 2 wins from it.
Yeah, look, and I think if you look at it now, we got pulled apart by St Kilda. I was at that Marvel game. That we were just taught a lesson. But against Brisbane, they were much better than us, but we held firm. We are looking better than what I thought we would at this stage of the season. And I think I saw something on Twitter, some North supporter was losing their mind saying that, you know, we're into our 5th rebuild or whatever. The Tigers have won 3 flags, bottomed out, and they're already ahead of us and Carlton.
I mean, there's an element of it that's, I won't say fully true because we might not be past them just yet, but in terms of, I think, the way that Richmond supporters leave games and how they feel is definitely much different to how West Coast and North supporters leave their game based on how they're tracking. It's it's quite a stunning turn of events in some ways.
Yeah, it is. I mean, if you look at our season, right, we are going to cop some more beltings. There's no doubt about that. 100%.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But we can see what the plan is, and we can see who is taking to it. We can see the development. You know, we can see Morris, Seth Campbell, et cetera, the green shoots, so to speak, if I was going to go into Bolton-esque language. So we actually don't mind the negative results as long as there are learnings and growth along the way. And that makes it much more palatable.
Yep.
To sit there and watch, you know, like the thing about the weekend was, like, we were fantastic, really good in the third quarter. And at the end of the third quarter, I still wasn't convinced we'd win the game, but I'm saying to myself, well, we've held on for a little bit longer this week.
Yeah. Yeah. We've prolonged the pain, if that makes sense, which is kind of what we were all getting at for a little while. And that's what it was going to be all about, was just if we can prolong the pain a little bit longer every time, then, you know, they're small wins to take. But to then hold on was something else altogether.
Oh, it was awesome. And, yeah, as I said, I may have had an extra couple of drinks on Saturday night. A little bit dusty, so it's all good.
All right, we'll get stuck into the game. So the Tigers, we got up by 11 points, 12-8-80 against the Gold Coast Suns, 9-15-69 at Marvel Stadium. So we've broken the curse finally. And, look, realistically, I know we all sort of joke and have a laugh about it, but in an AFL environment, the mantra simply has to just be anyone, anywhere, anytime. It can't be any other way. We can't worry about bitching and moaning about where we're playing. I know we do it as a bit of a piss take and a laugh, but I think it was good to get that win. But what was interesting is we actually, if I'm reading this correctly, which I think, yeah, we led at every change, which I don't think, well, almost certain we haven't done at all this year. And that's actually a big tick for me, to lead a game at every change, even though we might not have won every quarter. But to lead at every change, I think, is pretty significant for where we are with our football. But it was, I think for all of us, it was all about that third quarter. Six goals, one we kicked. So the accuracy was there. The speed of ball movement was there. It was just a whole package wrapped in one with a lovely little bow on top. It was just delightful to watch.
We did lead at every change. We were never behind at any stage in the game.
That's huge. Against the team that's undefeated, that is massive.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, look, that was in my notes, Seth. Look, he's fantastic, but if he wasn't playing for Richmond, I reckon I'd already be starting to get the shits with him. He's an annoying little bastard.
Seth? No, he's all right.
look, it's like we all get the shits with, like, your Nick Watson or whatever, or your Ginnivan, da 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 da. Like, he is going to get under a lot of people's skin.
Yeah, it looked like he rattled even Dan Rioli for different stages as well throughout the game.
Can anyone tell me what this is?
I think that was either he's cooking, like a bit of a Steph Curry that he let him cook, or right. Stirring the pot. I thought stirring the pot initially, but then I'm like, I reckon he's saying he's cooking is what I thought that might have been. But the other thing I loved about this game, and this only really works when you're kicking goals early and you're actually applying scoreboard pressure, but I loved the fight. I loved the unsociable aspect of our football. Like, we would have known going into that the Gold Coast are pretty upfront about that. Like, Mac Andrew and Sam Collins, they're pretty lippy. They love getting stuck into plays. Even Mac Andrew, after the Adelaide game, was still ripping into Riley Thilthorpe. And I love that we met that head on. We're like, nah, we're not having a bar of it. And it wasn't just the older guys. I mean, Tom Lynch unquestionably led the charge when he kicked that early goal, which was perfect. But then to see Jonty Fall and Sam Lawler getting in there, Seth Campbell, like, that's what, like, driving culture and in a positive way is made of. Like, I know, you know, some of them might get fined or whatever, who cares, but to see them all flying the flag for one another, I actually really liked the unsociable football from the Tiger Cubs. I'm all for it, and if we can do that every week, I'm all in on that.
Yeah, it's been noted by a couple of people in the media when talking about, again, we'll go back to North Melbourne, about how they're not putting up a fight, etc. And they're saying, look at the Tigers. They are actually in your face. They're nasty, they're niggly, whatever. And I don't know if you noticed, but after that first goal, when Lynch got into it and he had his jumper pulled and all that sort of stuff, the first person in front of him was Lawler.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's five games or whatever it is. So none of these kids are going to take a backward step. So, you know, that's a great – to have that mentality is a great place to start from.
100%. Yeah, no shyness, no backward steps. It was awesome to see. And like I said, it only really works if you're kicking goals early and you've got the scoreboard pressure to go with it. But if that's ever the case again, I fully expect to see that happen the next time around. I dig it. I thought it was really, really good. A few people, before we get into the stats, a few people have put in their concerns about Seth getting targeted by Tazzy, which is a really valid question. How, without wanting to piss off Kane Corns with going a 7-year contract, how long would you offer a contract to Seth Campbell for?
11 years.
11 years?
Yeah. We are going to lose someone, more than likely. If he goes, we'll be compensated. If he stays, fantastic. I want him to stay. I don't think he's done enough to get the mega contract. But when is he out of contract? I'm sure someone in the chat will know when he's actually out.
Yeah.
So when is Tazzy, 2028?
Yeah, so maybe, yeah, it's like, does he do a smaller one first and then try and extract a bigger contract down the track? Yeah, I don't know. It's a bit of a tricky one.
We're 2025. Say he's out of contract at the end of next year. I'd give him 3 years to 2029, and that means that you've then got the bargaining power if they want him.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I'm all for signing him up. Dave reckons that he'll sign a five-year extension.
Dave's actually said a couple of things about contracts in the chat tonight.
Yeah. And Dave's usually had some reasonable mail on this, so that would be very, very interesting. But yeah, hopefully we can keep him on the books. We'll go through some stats as well quickly. I think first and foremost, I do want to shout out the two elder statesmen in the midfield in particular, Taranto and Hopper. We've, not just us, but a lot of people have been a little bit critical of them in recent times. And I think that criticism was warranted. I'm not going to back away or shy away from them having below expectation performances. But on the flip side, we've also got to pat them on the back when they put in a blinder, and they both did against the Gold Coast Suns. Tim Taranto, 35 disposals, 4 marks, 6 tackles, 6 clearances. Jacob Hopper, Taranto got a goal as well. Jacob Hopper, 27 disposals, 4 marks, 2 tackles, 8 clearances. The big thing for me with these two, EJ, was the trend previously has been they would kind of fade away and have no impact after halftime. Against the Suns, they stayed in the contest for longer and they were still driving right until the end, and that made the biggest difference in the world as to how that game played out.
Yeah, 100%. And, I mean, we had really good contested numbers. There's plenty of stats where we probably were down a little bit. Like Timmy, for example, he had 18 contested possessions. And Hopper was second, I think, with 12. So right at the source, I mean, my big concern was Raoul and Anderson getting off the chain. I think overall we fought and matched really well. And that, even when they got on a run, and I'm sure we'll talk about the tactics at the start of the last quarter at some point, even when they got on a bit of a run, there wasn't a consistent chain of getting obliterated out of the centre like there was in earlier games. Like the game against Port, we looked like we were standing in mud. We didn't look like that on the weekend.
Let's call it a heavy training load. Can we use that line for the past few weeks? No, but it was a stark difference. It was huge. And I don't know whether there was some extra motivation for them and everyone else with this particular game or not, but what they did against Gold Coast, I think, is everyone's expectation of them on a weekly basis. Whether that's sustainable or not, I'm not sure. But the fact they were able to keep driving and driving and driving for, let's call it, 3.5 quarters, I thought was really, really good. Nick Vlosten, I laugh because of just how ridiculously well he played an intercept marked. 27 disposals, 13 marks, I think 11 or 12 intercept possessions, 4 tackles, 661 metres gained, That was a vintage Nick Vlosten performance that Darcy Byrne-Jones could never do.
Look, it is an absolute disgrace that he's never been All-Australian. I'm not saying he deserves it every year. And when I make this comparison, I'm not saying that Stewart doesn't deserve his All-Australians, because he's a bloody fantastic player. And we've all got a set against him because of what he did to Dion. he's a no doubt brilliant player. But for Vlosten to have none and for Stewart to have five, it just doesn't marry up. That was one of Nick's best games. He was immense. And I know the two guys in the middle. I've got an itchy nose. Sorry.
That's all right.
I know the two guys in the middle did their job and et cetera, et cetera. But Vlosten was so far and away best on ground, it wasn't even funny.
He was pretty good. And to Nick's point, Noel Bolter coming in, I think, made a hell of a difference in the way our defence set up. And not just Vlosten, but Miller as well. Like, the confidence they then have, knowing that Bolter's behind them as the last resort. Look, I know there's going to be a whole wide range of divided opinions on if he should have played, which we won't go near that tonight. But it helps drastically. And I think he could probably go as far as saying, if Bolter didn't play that game, we would have lost, just because of the domino effect it would have had in reverse.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. 100%. Like, we all know that Nick is a great intercept defender, and, you know, when he can create himself as a spare, we look a lot better, et cetera, et cetera. And that was certainly allowed by Bolter being in the side, 100%. And yet there's no way we win if Bolter isn't there. And, yeah, we'll stay away from it. You know, I've got my views on it that probably don't align with most Richmond supporters. But now that he's back, for a first-up performance, he was pretty solid.
Yeah, and like, without going into all the stuff that's going on, I suppose the concern with him playing was, will he be mentally right, like, heading the game? Because it's still obviously whatever it is to play out tomorrow, of course. But he put in one heck of a performance, and obviously he knows he's got to earn the respect and everything back of everybody, and that's not a bad first step forward in the footy regard.
No, and I mean, it wasn't just, he had 10 intercepts to go along with Vlosten's 15, you know what I mean?
That's crazy.
So between them, 25. That's nuts.
I don't know about you, but every time the ball got kicked in their 50, I was nervous that these guys are just looking to mark it. They're not even worried about spoiling. Like, no, we'll just pluck this one and just get it moving. I'm like, gee, it's a bit ballsy, but it was working.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a familiarity between Broad, Vlosten, Bolter, that when they're all together, they've got the confidence that so-and-so covers so-and-so. They all move, you know, they've had years together.
Yep.
So to get that third cog of experience back made a massive difference.
Yeah, it definitely did. And to a few people's point in chat as well, Nathan Broad was really good too. I think we shouldn't forget about Broady. And even Jaden Short had a good game too.
That was Jaden Short's, I know he's had other meters games that were better, et cetera, et cetera. But from an accountability point of view, I think that was his best game of the season.
Yeah, and it was great to see Shorty kick that long bomb as well. That's what the Shorty we love, when he kicked that so cleanly. It was beautiful. It never looked like missing. It was a great kick.
Oh, it just—it looked like it had a jetpack. Like,
yeah,
I don't know how such a midget gets such good purchase on the ball. But
now Shorty did kick his one a long way. However, if that goalpost wasn't in the way of Jonty Falls' kick for goal, the ball would still actually be travelling tonight, I reckon. That's how far he kicked the bloody thing. That from on the paint of 50. It hit the top of the post as it was still maybe going up. It definitely wasn't coming down. That was an absolute monster of a kick. And that was a behind, one of the best behinds I've ever seen. It was unbelievable. And I'm genuinely excited to see more of that.
Yeah. And a couple of people have made the point too, we were able to give Traynor a week off. So he's going to be right to go Thursday night.
Yeah, he will be. I was a little bit bummed about I don't know, maybe I'm wrong with the theory on the the sub part. But if we're going to only play him for 4 or 5 minutes, should we have just given him a full rest and put someone else there who we could have used more tactically if we had to? I don't know. I mean, we got the win, so it didn't ultimately matter, I guess. But it just seemed odd how it played out. But there would have been reasons behind it.
Yeah, there's reasons behind it. As I said, I think on Saturday night, I'm not sure if Jonty's going to play every week, et cetera, et cetera. I think there will be some rotation with the kids. And it's not. Sometimes it's not going to be form related. It's going to be, he's had 5 weeks, or maybe if we just give him a freshen. I think we'll see it a few times.
Yeah, I think
We've already seen it with Lawler. Lawler's had a week off.
It's illogical to expect these young kids to play a full season every minute. It's such a big jump from going from under-18s to AFL, even from a training perspective, far be it the games. So as frustrated as the kids might be that they're not playing all those games, it's just not sustainable. And it's 100% the right call to rest them at various stages, whether we all like it or not. Sam Banks had a pretty good game as well, one of his best for a little while, I think. 20 disposals, 3 marks, 3 tackles, 321 metres gained. Just settling into the side nicely, I think.
Yeah, he was really good. I think he might have even snuck into my votes. I thought he was more physical than I've seen for a while.
Yeah.
And I think everyone was, but no, I was really impressed. Both Banks and Hugo up and going really helps us on the wings, on the flanks.
Speaking of Hugo, I know he said it last week as well, but it's so nice to have him back in. And what I'm really enjoying seeing is I feel like he's really taken the mantle from Camden McIntosh in the sense of he doesn't really lose a one-on-one contest on the wing. He's good marking overhead. And then he's got that, obviously, that burst of speed to go with it. I'm loving him back in the side and loving the confidence and the speed and energy he brings to us on the park.
And I think over time it's going to be like K-Mac. He's going to divide opinion because he's only going to have 13 or 14 possessions. But people, and I tell you, get to the ground, have a look, the unrewarded running, the holding the width, keeping your opponent accountable, being really physical. Like he will be that solid B-minus, C-plus grade player that is a bottom 10 player in the side. He'll never be like a superstar, but he'll tick the job off every week. And what we're starting to see from Hugo is there's none of this up and down. There's a more level plane of performance.
Yes. So
that's when you get your – I don't know how many games he's played now. He's played 50 games. Be close.
He'd be getting close.
Yeah. Once you have a certain amount of games in your system, your performance has a minimum level that you can usually meet. And that's when size gain consistency. And that's what we're trying to do, get the games into the kids so that there's always that minimum level.
And again, his running numbers, thank you, Super, for posting that, ran over 15K again. And that's the norm for him. He is an aerobic beast, exactly like Campbell was. Okay, there we go.
So that's starting
to hit right in the sweet spot, isn't it, in terms of your experience and feeling like you belong, and then your output becomes more consistent. He's putting together, I say, a good season. He's only played a couple of games, but you just feel really comfortable with him out there in that role now.
Yeah, and like K-Mac, he's developing that real elite endurance where he'll just run all day.
Yeah, and that's a problem for opposition. A winger who can run at speed all day is a serious problem for people. So that's good that he's on our side. Another one who brought a lot of speed to the side, who maybe divided people in the first half, but I was right behind this gentleman the whole way, Maurice Rioli Jr., I thought had a ripper game. 1 goal, 10 disposals, 2 marks, 7 tackles, and a crazy, I think it was like 26, 27 pressure acts. I think he was the leader.
Number one for us for pressure.
Yeah. Now, I know people were getting a little bit antsy with him in the first half because he maybe made a couple of blunders, but I was all about the fact that I could see he was trying to do stuff. I'm like, I'm okay if they make mistakes when they're trying to execute something or trying to make something happen. It's when they're sitting back and playing it safe and still making mistakes, that's when I have a bit of an issue. So the fact he was still trying to take the game on was good to see in the first half. Now, it could have gone one of two ways with him. He could have gone into his shell in the second half and just retreated a bit and stopped trying those things. But instead, he goes out there and dances in between four Gold Coast Suns players on the half forward line, pushes off people, and reads a great bit of ball work from Lynchy to keep it in, jags a goal. It was a great response, and I thought he made a huge difference to our team again.
Yes, and not only did he read what Lynch was doing, he hip and shouldered Collins out of the way to get the ball.
Yeah, I don't reckon Collins knew he was there.
Yeah, right. That wasn't some stick. Collins is a big fella.
Yeah.
Team high 23 pressure acts. Some great chase down. A couple of games in now, you can see that the ability to run out more of the game is there. Steely was equal second for pressure acts. Yep. But no, fantastic. I can't see him leaving the side anytime soon, and I wouldn't mind maybe a couple of centre bounce attendances.
I've been calling that for a while, and it's not unforeign for him. He did it in the VFL a few times last year. But I feel like he's starting to get a sense he belongs as well, and I think he maybe now realises the importance of getting involved in the play early and pushing high up the ground. I think the downfall we had with him previously is we were keeping him too deep and he wasn't able to get amongst the play early enough. But him pushing up to the wing and the half back line and then running with the ball, with the play, that's dangerous for other teams if he gets out in the space.
Yeah, and the other thing is being up higher, you're going to be at least involved in the pressure side of the game, so you feel like you're contributing. When you are deep and you are isolated and it comes down, there's almost an internal pressure that I have to make something happen. Whereas if you've already made two tackles, tapped a ball to a person running past on the outside, things like that, you're in a better headspace anyway.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think it might have been I think it was Thompson Dow who maybe was quoted post-game saying that, like, the boys just love the amount of pressure that he brings because he puts fear into the opposition. And that's what we mean when we talk about perceived pressure. It gets to the point where he doesn't even need to lay the tackle to be effective. It's just the sheer fact that he's closing in on you makes you make a decision you maybe didn't want to make 3 seconds ago.
Yep. Inferred pressure, I think they call it.
It's great to have. And I guess the question becomes, which we'll probably get to a little bit after as well, how does Ryan Mansell fit back in? I mean, you mentioned Steely Green before. You said he had the second highest pressure act. Is that right?
Yes. Tim Tirano and Steely, so Morris 23, Tim Tirano and Steely 21, and our mate Thompson Dow with 16, and then K-Mac. So Dow, again, defensively, was highly up there as well.
Yeah, and again, I saw people trying to pot him, but the kid's not doing a hell of a lot wrong. And he got a goal as well, which I was super pumped for him for. You can tell in his own mind, he's been wanting that goal for a few weeks now. He's missed it. He's blown a couple of easy chances. But for him to get that, I think it's just really good reward for effort. And, you know, I saw a lot of people get hung up on his 85-meter gain stat. It's like his job's an extractor to handball it out to the guys who can use it. His job's not to gain that four. I would be more concerned if he was gaining 400 metres kicking the ball, because that's not his strength. His strength's finding the pill and getting it out to a guy who can use it. So I'm not at all fazed by 85 metres gained whatsoever.
No, me neither. 10 handballs out of 18 possessions, that tells you that he's on the inside. You know, 6 contested possessions, a good amount of ground ball gets. So, no, he's doing his job. Unfortunately, even though he's doing his job, if and when, and I don't think it's next week, because I think from the VFL there's more time needed for a couple of players that we talk about, but when we get everybody ready, it is going to be that sort of fringe player, even though they're doing their job, that might have to make way.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. A couple more players we'll talk about quickly before we push on. Sam Lawler, 1 goal, 16 disposals, 5 marks, 1 tackle, 2 clearances. Obviously smashed into the fence and hurt himself a bit, but he seems okay. My only, it's not even a criticism, it's just me being very picky. He had 4 kicks and 12 handballs. I want that flipped. I want 12 kicks and 4 handballs because he's such a beautiful kick of the ball. Having said that though, his handballs are equally as impactful and effective because they're often releasing players, and his vision and awareness in traffic, like even that last quarter, when the heat's on, he picks it up in a pack in defensive 50, weaves his way through, keeps running back towards the Gold Coast goal, My wife screaming, "What's he doing? Turn around!" And no, he's going to find someone here. And he fires off the handball, and then away we go. So he's very smart either way. I just want to see him kick it more because he's a beautiful kick.
Yeah, I think. But his footy IQ is really high. With a couple of those handballs, he actually was waiting for the opposition players to come to him before releasing. So he's actually freeing up our teammate by taking the heat on himself before disposing. I think over time, as he plays more midfield time, we'll see more. Yeah, I'm a little bit dusty, as I said. I'm on the sons and daughters tonight. we'll see more over time.
I think that's a good call. But your point's bang on that he is prepared to absorb pressure to release someone else further up the ground. And not all players are prepared to do that. A lot of players want to get it in and out of their hands as quick as possible, but he's prepared to draw the heat and then get it going. And Smiley's the same. If you watch the VFL, he's exactly the same, which is good.
So Grock's saying there, you know, can you point out how well he lowered the eyes, hit the target 45 out? That goes again to that footy IQ. He takes the time, makes the right decision, and he's got that heat. With the skills, he's done that a few weeks now, hit someone on the lead up. Mm-hmm. And knowing that that's the person with the ball in hand actually encourages the forwards to lead up because they know they'll get rewarded.
Yeah, exactly right. No, we're very lucky to have him. And that's, where was it, CJ? That's good to hear about Lula, that he didn't hit the fence, he just pulled up. He got an elbow on the ribs. Okay, that's better than hitting the fence, but hopefully he pulls up fine. He obviously went back on, so I imagine he's okay. The only other player I want to talk about, and his name's come up a few times, is Samson Ryan. Now, he's copped a bit of heat throughout the last couple of days. Now, I'm really torn on this because while I acknowledge, and I think everyone acknowledges, that him taking those first few centre bounces in the last quarter wasn't ideal, and I'm not sure if it was by design. I can't quite understand how that could be accidental because you've left a huddle and your Ruckman's on the bench. Like, it's not like an interchange thing. So anyway, that's one thing. So even though he did lose those first couple of clearances to Witts in that last quarter, which got the Suns rolling, I was happy that he wrestled back and sort of fought back and amended things a bit. And prior to that, I actually thought he didn't do so bad when he was in the ruck against Witts. Didn't have a massive game, of course. Didn't have a fantastic game, but it's a game that he needs, and unfortunately he now can't because he's injured, that he would need to build on. And it's just a confidence and needs to do it on a more frequent basis. But then he turns out he's got a plantar fascia injury and he's out for 2 to 3 weeks. So God knows when that happened. For all we know, that happened in the second or third quarter potentially. And he was running around not completely right. But what did you make of Samson's game and where to here for him besides the medical room?
I'd like to think that he'd hurt his foot before the last quarter. That would give me some sort of, okay, that's why, because the first few centre bounces were really poor. I think he might get a few games in the second half of the year as us putting him in the shop window, because when you have Sims, Fall, Armstrong, et cetera, et cetera, he's not a number one ruck. He's not a number one ruck. And I don't think he's going to be good enough as a forward. So where does that leave you apart from being spare parts on a list? Whereas he might be more useful to someone else. And I mean, we had that with Ivan for a while, but Ivan ended up eventually being physically strong enough to have an impact. And I don't see that with Ryan at the moment. So medium term, I don't see a spot for him at all.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a bit of work to do, no doubt. He's still young in ruck terms, but as others have mentioned, by now, though, you'd still like to be seeing some really good progressive steps in that development cycle, and it's just not happened yet, whether it's opportunity. Because at VFL level, he tends to do okay. Like, he'll take his marks and kick goals and do all that. It's just that transitioning to the AFL level, it's just not ticking all the boxes. But I mean, it's shit news that he hurt his foot, but yeah, hopefully he comes back and gets. I think he'll get a cluster of games at some point, though.
Yeah,
just look to see.
I wish him the best, and I hope he makes it. But there's a handful of people out there that are too good for VFL but don't make it in AFL, right? I'm not going to go over old ground, but Cumberland was the perfect example, right? So maybe he is that guy. If he's not, I hope he makes it, whether it's with us or with someone else, because he seems like a nice young bloke.
But yeah, no, he definitely is.
Yeah, I can't see it at the moment.
And it's a really interesting predicament with the game we've got coming up against Melbourne, but we'll get to that shortly. I'll shift over to the VFL quickly because they played on Friday night and they had their first loss against Frankston, 15-8-98 to 11-7-73. Cool. We were actually winning that game for three quarters and we just bottled it in the last quarter. Frankston had a really good comeback there. The first thing I'll say is there was 60 free kicks paid that game, which is just ridiculous. And there was a lot of shit missed ones. But anyway, that to one side. Tyler Sonzi, as we all thought was going to happen, in three quarters, EJ, 35 touches he had, 5 marks, 3 tackles and a goal. He only had the one clearance, but he was getting more of that second possession out of the midfield. He had a ripper game, and him not being played in the last quarter probably actually cost us the game in a lot of ways, but I understand why they got to do it. Caleb Smith had 33 touches, 7 marks, 4 tackles, 4 clearances. Your man, Kane McCall, of 26 disposals, 2 marks, 5 tackles, 7 clearances. Campbell Gray had 17. Smiley had 14 disposals, 3 tackles, 3 clearances. He was still at what felt like was managed minutes, but a bit of... Jasper Alger was the other one that caught my eye. 2 goals, 2 lovely snaps around the body from marks, 12 disposals, 3 marks, 4 tackles, 1 clearance. So that were probably the highlights. And Jacob Bauer kicked 4 goals as well, and he had a bit of a hissy fit at the end when he wasn't paid a mark and threw the ball into the fence, which, look, not great to see, but I don't blame him either because it was definitely a one-grab mark for those who are watching. But, yeah, interesting times with the VFL mids. Sonzi and McAuliffe in particular doing really well again.
Yeah, I just don't know whether there's going to be a spot for him this week.
Well, I think it would have been easy to slot him in if we had a loss, as we all thought we were probably going to, but on the back of winning, it's kind of hard to change the team. But I'm still super frustrated with the whole Sonzi thing. And we're talking about on the live VFL stream that if in the AFL side, we are bringing a player in to play the half forward role, don't bring in Sonzi to do that. Bring in Jasper Elgar, like a guy who's actually playing half forward in your VFL, understands the role better and actually plays it properly. I think we're kind of missing the mark there a little bit with who we bring in and out instead of trying to bring in a midfielder to play half forward where he doesn't know what he's doing. And it shows. Like, it's not a knock on him. It's just it's not his position. And then he goes into the midfield and shoots the lights out again.
Yeah, look, I don't know. I've got my suspicions. I don't know what the issue with Sonzi is with the coaching panel, but they make the decision and it's not he's been with under a couple of different coaches now, so it's not a one coach taking a stand against him. I agree, if he's not going to play in the guts, don't bring him in.
Yeah.
There's a reason they're not putting him in there. What is the reason? That's what we've got to figure out. We can be as upset every week at the fact that he doesn't get a go at this, doesn't get a go at that, but there's a very clear reason, and I'm sure he knows what it is. It's frustrating not knowing what it is.
Yeah, I know. And they don't have to tell us what it is, obviously, but there's something going on as to the why. But you know what will happen. He'll leave somewhere else for opportunity and they'll unlock it and he'll smash it.
Yeah, well, you know what? That's what they said that Cumberland would do, and Cumberland didn't even make Carlton list. So
true.
Sometimes these people who are coaching these players, they're not going to hang the player out to dry and say, oh, he's no good at this, he's no good at that. But they have an issue of some description. Otherwise, he would be playing in the guts because, as we say, every second week when he goes back, he dominates in the guts.
I feel like, though, why don't they then just play him on half forward in the VFL so we can actually apply what he's training in both levels and maybe get proficient at the role?
Yep.
But then selfishly from the VFL, he's obviously a very handy footballer and helps in terms of winning games. So it's a true predicament. But anyway, What else was I going to put for the VFL? No, that was it for the VFL. Oh, well, Smiley's an interesting one, EJ. All week, I was saying that all roads pointed to an Anzac Eve debut. That was on the assumption we were going to get thumped by the Gold Coast. I thought it would be an easy thing to slot in. The fact we've beaten him, I don't think you can make too many changes. And truthfully, he's still, I don't think, up to scratch yet from a tank perspective. So if you're playing things out in a real world scenario, he doesn't play in the AFL this week. He'll play VFL again. He's looking good. I just think he's maybe one or two games away.
I think he's one or two games away. And where are we? Maybe Hawthorn the week after.
Yeah, maybe. Yep.
You know, just one more week. Just one more week. But I think his tank needs a little bit more work. And we don't want to do a Jack Watts here and throw him to the Wolves before it's too early.
Yeah, I'm selfishly glad he's playing in the twos because I'm going down to watch the game on Thursday. So, actually, the other thing for the VFL is about, in particular, about a player who'll be playing a game, Juddy Clark, welcome back. I'm assuming he's going to play VFL, not AFL, but what an absolute great story that is for him and the Richmond Football Club back from the ACL. As someone who's done an ACL twice, it's a long, long road back, and I'm super pumped for him to get his chance at playing again, even if it's at VFL level. So I'm equally as glad to be there to see him play his first game for a year. And it's going to be really interesting to see where we play him, whether we go half back, whether you go wing or just leave him at half forward. I think he's going to be versatile in that sense. So that's actually going to be quite fascinating.
Yeah, I know RFC is a big rat for sticking him on a half back flank, given he's a good ball user and he's got that pace. This is really exciting because we have a lot of players coming off ACLs and it's the first one back. And we know we'll get McKelty in the next few weeks after that. It's positive signs. We had a couple of really poor years with injury and so far, oh no.
Have I got you to do it?
Oh no. No.
This will all make sense very quickly, I think, people. Do I bring it up now? Do I just pull up the image?
That's not even a setup.
Do I bring it up? I'm bringing it up. On the back of EJ dropping the word.
Well, because I'm not going to... Now, everyone in the comments is having a crack. But the two people with the most exclamation marks were the two people that actually used the word. And one of those people, I'm talking to all of you people, all of you. One of those people, after they used the word, then we had a couple of different injury setbacks, right? So I'll blame being dusty. Exactly. That's what I'm going to do. Yes, I did roast you for this earlier in the day, but you're the one that wrote it down. So I had to read it, and now it's in my brain, and it's your fault. When we talk about player availability every week, we will use the term fitness report or fitness update.
Fitness update, I like it.
We are not to use the other terms because, much like Marvel, I believe there is a curse. I believe we need to break the curse. And I believe all of us together are responsible for helping lift the curse.
It's a collective
fitness report or fitness update, please.
Okay. Fitness report.
And I need all of you to help me because Michael said it a couple of weeks ago.
I did. RFC Senate stitched this up on Twitter.
Yes. I wasn't going to name names, but now that they're having a crack at me, RFC Senate did it. Jones Racing did it today. Enough of this. No more.
Very good.
Oh,
that's a good call, Warren. Next one who sends it on the pod gets sent straight to Groupie's Dungeon. Jeez.
I think I've still got that background somewhere.
Yeah, you would too. I'll often say it in a video I'm making specifically, try not to say it in. That's how good I go with it. But no, it's good to see that list is getting a lot shorter. And I think Serple made mention of a couple of other ACL players. I'm just bringing up the screen now. So Ryan Mansell available, which is good, which we'll get to very shortly. Samson Ryan, 2 to 3 weeks with his foot, which we mentioned earlier. McKelty Lefau, 4 to 6 weeks, which is awesome. So he'll be back soon. Tyler Young, 5 to 7 weeks. He might be one that may struggle to crack back into the AFL team, I feel. Harry Armstrong, 10 to 12 weeks. So no real progress there. Dion Prestia, Achilles, TBC. I've heard bits and pieces about this that, it feels like the end might be near, potentially, in that one. Like, that report is worse than what it was a few weeks ago. And I don't think it's a hiding from anybody as to what's probably about to unfold in the next 3, 4, or 5 weeks.
I think that they're softening the blow for us by changing the rating or whatever you want to call it, the status. Yeah, and I would be unsurprised if there was an announcement in the next few weeks.
Yeah, I think that will be – look, it's shit because he's done so much for the club and he's one of our favourite players and all that kind of stuff. He'd love for things like this to be on his terms, but it honestly just hasn't read well for the last month. Like, that report's not been a glowing endorsement of his progression, and a few people have even noted that he hasn't even really been training much the last couple of weeks as well, doing a lot of coaching stuff. So, I mean, the positive is he's still heavily involved in the club and he's having an impact in a different way. So I think that's still a really good thing for him and for us. I just have my doubts that his body's going to allow him to get back this year, which is really shit.
Yep. Might be Raso time, though.
Well, and that's the kicker, isn't it? Like, you don't want to miss out on someone like a Raso or a McCarthy, because, they are pretty special players. But he's been coaching Smiley VFL, and that's a win. That is a win as well. And he's got such good football knowledge and IQ to pass on that's a massive bonus for us as well. So wins all around there. All right, before we get into the Melbourne game, I haven't got the audio ready. I've jumped ahead of my own where I'm at with my mouse button. Hang on. Let me bring that up there. Stop that. It's time for...
Hang on. Oh, where are we?
Come on, man.
Where are we? Come back to me. Here we go. Right. First of all, just a little side swipe at Jones Racing. Like, come on, man. He's having a bit of a sook this afternoon about, what are the MRO going to do about Bailey sticking the ball in the face? Like, that's just football. If we're gonna sook about everything, let's be serious. Come on, man.
He'll get fined for that, just quietly.
Oh, yeah. Who cares? I'd be more interested to see what they do with Atkins and resting his knee on Newcomb's neck head.
Yeah.
That's what happens with that. I mean, we all know that Connor Nash is going to get a minimum 3, but did you see Atkins drop the knee?
I didn't see that one. No, I'll have to go back and try and find it.
Yeah. So, but fair income this week. Damien Barrett, you are a clown.
Come on, man.
If there is anyone that we should not listen to, it is you. Right. Richmond Football Club, I believe, have mishandled the Bolter situation. I think they stuffed it up. That's beside the point. You can actually say that you disagree with the way that we've handled it, and that's fine because everyone's entitled to their view. But to sit there on the Sunday footy show and pontificate that, I'm not going to listen to another word that club says for the next year at least, get your self-important head out of your own self-important ass, right? You worked on Triple M with a bloke called Wayne Carey, whose list of indiscretions stretches all the way back to the South Australian border when he went over there and played for Adelaide including very serious physical allegations against his partner, and you didn't say diddly squat. You work at Channel 9, we rehired Tom Morris, and you didn't say diddly squat. You're too busy with your nose up the arse of the AFL and Geelong Football Club, who may or may not be the same entity. Right? Of all the people that I want to pay any attention to or who have any right to have such high-standing, highfalutin bullshit views, it's you. Get stuffed.
Come on, man.
That was a come on, man / bloodbath. That was great. That was very, very good. No, he's, look, as I posted on Twitter in reply to Footy 9, their tweet about Barrett saying that, it's not really going to make any difference at all because, as he said himself a couple of years ago on Trade Radio when he thought he was offline, the clubs don't tell him shit anymore anyway. So none of the clubs like him. They don't tell him anything. So him not listening to us, well, you know what? We've got nothing to tell him. So it doesn't really matter a hell of a lot. But yeah, he unbelievable areas
for Daniel Barrett. Have a look, at the two bobbleheads in fourth and fifth on that list, will you?
Yes.
Right? Two of the most bloody delusional, self-important flogs that think that the media is the game. Anyway, let's move on.
No, that's a good one. Jeez, yeah. I hope he stays in the leaderboard for the rest of the year. That is, horrible.
We might have to make it a top 10.
Yeah.
I don't want to remove him.
Worst case, you'll get an honourable mention at the end of the year. So, all right, well, let's push on to the upcoming game, Anzac Eve against Melbourne, which is always a really special occasion, and I know it's one that the players are undoubtedly looking for. If you are able to go to the game, guys, I do strongly suggest getting there early enough to see all the pre-game ceremonies. It's really good, obviously time permitting and transport and things like that, but it's an interesting game, EJ, because all of a sudden it feels like a 50-50 game against the D's. And I was a little bit torn even with their game on the weekend. They also knocked the Dockers off by 10 points, winning their first game for the year. Part of me was hoping they were going to lose that, so the pressure mounted. But then I didn't want to be the first team they beat. And then they've won. I'm like, oh, they're going to have confidence. But then we won. I'm like, oh, shit, we're going to have confidence too. So I feel like the two things kind of cancel each other out. But it's going to be a fascinating game. We'll talk about the changes first that we might have on our list. So Samson Ryan is obviously out for 2 to 3 weeks with the foot. The big question is, Max Gawn's obviously one of the best ruckmen we've seen in the modern era. Nank on the bench in the last quarter very much seemed like the plan was to sub him, but to see how it played out and we had to pull the pin on it. So he was on managed minutes. Will he be able to get through a large enough portion of the game to impact against Gawn, or are we going to need another big body to do it? And the problem we've got is there's not really anyone in the shed ready enough to maybe do it. Like I threw out Hayes Brown and Kalina on Twitter, kind of in jest, but kind of serious too, because I think Sims is too thin. As much as we would love to see Sims play, I think he would get pushed around too much. Whereas at least Kalina and Hayes Brown have got actual size, but not real actual runs on the board. Then there's the option of, I mean, Bolter could do it potentially, but I'm going to say no because he's better in the back line. Miller can do it, which may be how it plays out, because if the D's don't have two big power forwards, that could be an option. And I don't think Bauer is at all capable of doing it. And obviously Blight is the other one who could come in, but he didn't really have a great game in the VFL, but it might serve a different purpose now.
I would tend to say that Trainer won't be the sub, and then you've got the flexibility of Bolter and Miller, either of down back, being the chop-out ruckman for that 5 or so minutes a quarter.
Yeah, I think that's how it might have to play out, because like as much as he'd love to give the experience to one of those other younger guys, I don't see it turning out all that well. So I'm just having a look at their forwards. That seems the most logical way for it to play out, doesn't it, that we just have Miller. It can't be Bolter. I feel like it's got to be Miller. Would that be a fair call? Would I have to do the rucking? If we don't bring in Blight, like, is there room for Blight to come in this environment to do the rucking and play forward? Or Are we happy with how it's going with Jonty Fall and
who's doing the chop out for the D's?
Well, it could be Van Ruin.
Well,
Harrison Petty. Why is he? Wait, Van Ruin's not even playing, is he? Harrison Petty would probably do some backup rucking, I dare say.
So that he's quite a physical unit. So you're going to I'm not averse to Bolter or Miller both doing some time. That's the way that I'd go. I don't think Fall's ready for the ruck yet. I don't think he's ready for the ruck. Physically, yeah. I mean, we saw Ryan get manhandled at the start of the last quarter. We don't want that sort of stuff to happen. So I don't see Fall being ready yet. Trainer plays. No rucks down back, leaves us too short, but Trainer didn't play on the weekend. That's what I'm saying. So Trainer becomes not the sub. Therefore, you've got Trainer, Bolter, Miller, Broad, Vlosten, et cetera, you can rotate one of those guys as a second ruck, and it's only going to be for 5 minutes a quarter because Nank goes most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting one. And I know that Uze doesn't want to take a ruckman from the back line, though, because it can cause instability. So how they work that out, it'd be interesting to see.
But the second ruck comes off the bench. So Bolter or Miller comes off, has a 2 or 3 minute break, change of play, Nank comes to the bench, they go on.
Mm.
It's just what we don't need is another communications error.
Yeah, I just saw that from CJ that Nank, where is it? It's just scrolled past. There was a comms error. I haven't heard the interview. I truthfully find it hard to believe it was a comms error because it was the start of a new quarter. Like the coach would have held up a board with some magnets on it, and I'm guessing it either said Nank in the ruck or Samson Ryan in the ruck. So I don't quite understand how that could be a communication issue, if I'm being totally honest. But I'll take Nank for his word. But I personally don't buy it just because it wasn't during a quarter. It was at this end of a break. Doesn't really make too much sense. Now, what about Ryan Mansell?
Noah played ruck in one of the flags, second ruck.
Bolter, Bolter has. I suppose it's more about not wanting to take him away from that spot. But either Miller and or Bolter could do it if we don't bring in Blight. And if May and Lever still aren't in as well, May's 50-50, that can play a part too as to who we might bring in as well. But what about in terms of the speedsters? We've got Ryan Mansell now available to come in.
Yep.
What do you do? I mean, is it just Ryan Mansell for Samson Ryan and then it's a shuffling of Trainer not being sub and so on and so forth?
Yeah. Steely Green might be unlucky as well.
I mean, that's the name that came to my mind. But then when you tell me that he had the equal second highest pressure axe, I struggle to believe that we would drop someone who had the second highest amount of pressure axe in a game where pressure's king in terms of causing turnover and creating opportunity. I think that would maybe send a bad message, but then I don't know what the answer is. If it could just be Ryan for Mansell. I just don't know. If you want to try and drive work rate and pressure into the plays, someone gets the second highest amount, then you drop him. I fear what that would look like.
Night game too, so it's going to be probably a little bit less important to be super tall. Maybe it is just Samson for Ryan.
I would be happy enough with that. Is there a world in which Mansell goes to the VFL?
Oh, no, because I think that the club, A, he was playing well when he got suspended, but B, the club thinks he shouldn't have been suspended. So I think he'll come straight back in. Why does Mansell even come in? Wow. I reckon he's been our most consistent player, our most consistent small up forward for a while now.
It'll be interesting as well to see if he was to come in, the pressure he would generate along with Morris Jr. I think would be exciting to see. I think they will set imagine if we can keep Steely Green in as well, Mansell, Green and Rioli pressure could be a huge win for us. just in that
going back to Butler, Castagna, Rioli.
It's tried and tested, though, isn't it? It's just a different group of people. Like it's the same. And I mean, I guess the other thing is, will there be any other players that have soreness on this shorter turnaround in particular? No one had any obvious signs of being sore. I mean, I know Lawler copped the knock in the ribs. He seemed okay, but I don't know if there's a chance that he might not get up for that. Hopper and Taranto both looked fine. Camden McIntosh, I mean, is he another one that they look at for a rest? But again, you'd love to see him sit on the best midfielder again, whether that's Viney or Oliver or Petrarca.
You're right. There might be one or two sneaky rotations through soreness that we don't know about yet. But
yeah, for
presuming
sure.
Presuming everyone's okay, I'd probably just go Ryan for Manson.
And I'm assuming that Sonzi doesn't get a look in unless there's some unforeseen soreness that we don't know about from players, even though he put in a good VFL game. If you're going to bring a player in, you'd still pick Mansell because he plays that position better than Sonzi plays that position.
Yep.
I think is what it comes down to. Now, the Ds have got a player in particular that set the G on fire the other day. Cozzy Pickett, 5 goals, 24 disposals, 5 marks, 3 tackles, 4 clearances. I don't know if he caught any of the game or the highlights, but he was unbelievable, to be honest. He had a really, really good game. And I think I made comment at the time that he, in the midfield, showed exactly why I think you need speed in the midfield from the centre clearances, because he just burst away. No one could get near him, and he was just dropping goals from 50. So he presents a really big challenge for us, I think.
Yeah. That's why it wouldn't be a bad idea to stick MRJ in there. Speed on speed.
Speed on speed.
Yeah, I don't know if we do have a good matchup in the centre square for him.
Not with the four players we use currently.
No.
Like, it would have to be a Mansell or a Rioli would have to go in there to actually execute that matchup.
Yep. It's definitely the conundrum. But I mean, we thought that Rao was going to tear us a new one, and here we are.
Yeah, well, he did for a little bit, but didn't get on with it. Now, the Ds have obviously got a fairly – it's weird, isn't it? Like, on paper, they've got a really good midfield group. They've got Jack Viney, Christian Petrarca, and they've obviously got Harvey Langford in there as well, Clayton Oliver. I feel, after seeing how we went against Gold Coast, I kind of feel okay with Taranto and Hopper and Ross and whatnot going head-to-head with them if they're putting out the same output that we did against the Suns.
Yeah, because, I mean – Petrarca can be explosive, but you're not really worried about getting burnt by Viney and Oliver. It's more that they've got fantastic physical competitiveness and a great work rate, like they won't stop, but they're not going to blow you away. So that doesn't scare you as much. Even though you know they're going to work hard, it doesn't scare you as much.
Yeah, that's fair. It's a fair point. Is there a part of the ground you think that we might be able to, I don't want to get a hold of them, but have an edge? Like, I'm looking at their defenders, for example, Harrison Petty, who I think ironically played forward last time against us. We made him look like Wayne Carey from memory. So it'll be interesting to see if he starts down back. They've also got Tom McDonald down there, Howes, Rivers, Xavier Lindsay, who's obviously a first-year player. I think this is where another one of these games where our smalls need to get to work and our talls have to just play it smart by just bring the ball to ground. If you can't mark it, Lynch and Jonty Fall, which they're both, to be fair, they're both very good at doing that secondary option. If they can't mark it, they're pretty good at not letting their opponent mark it. So it has to be a game full of that, I think, to give ourselves a chance.
Yeah, I mean, if May misses again and there's no May, no lever, you have to say that that's the area where we can generate. They are going well. That's an area where we can generate opportunity, 100%. But we need to get the ball into the forward 50 more. One of the great stats from the weekend was we lost the forward 50 count 62-42, and we've won the game. the thing I like about that is that that shows that when we're going in forward, our connection's actually pretty good because we're generating a score from limited inside 50s. If we can up that number, that will go a long way to us having success in the game.
What's the magic number, do you reckon? Is it 50, 55?
54.
54, is it really?
I've always had this number. So mid-50s. If we get to mid-50s, that's the number. And right, we've been hanging around about 40, so we need to up it.
Okay. That's good to know. That's something to look out for then. Very interesting. Okay, so the D's have still got some players in the mix potentially to come back. So they've got Bailey Fritch potentially to come back. Van Rooyen got dropped, might come back. May might be 50-50. Lever apparently missing. So that gives us some hope. They're a little bit in disarray. I know they got the win, but if we can apply some good heat early and be that unsociable Tigers again, I think we give ourselves a real chance for this.
Yeah. Oh, look, I'm a lot more hopeful about a good showing against Melbourne than what I was against the Gold Coast. And here we are. So, you know, so we say, what are we going to do about Pickett? What are Melbourne going to do about Campbell? Like, he's only needing 10 or 15 possessions to really damage sides, and it's exactly the same thing. It's the power and the pace, and they're both very clean footballers. So whilst being mindful of what they can cause us, we've got to look at the positives as well.
That's true. And Seth Campbell, to be fair, on the weekend had a really good comeback game. So opposition will start putting some time into him now, I think, with the body of work that he's putting in. But yeah, I just feel like this is going to be one of those games where our smalls could be the key to winning here. If we can have our pressure rating right up with Morris Jr., with Seth Campbell, Steely Green, if Ryan Mansell comes back in, if we can pressure their defenders, I think we can cause a bit of chaos there. And it's kind of scary going into a game where you actually feel like we might be a chance. I'm scared that it will go the other way, Tom Hafey game style. We'll stink it up completely. It makes me a little bit nervous, to be honest. But I think if we're talking about pure effort, if we put in the effort that we did against Gold Coast, I think the rest will look after itself.
Yep, and again, look, take the result out of it. All we want to see is stay competitive, to not drop the heads, and be in the game for as long as possible.
Yeah, agree. All right, well, with that said, let's get a tip, including margin, for this one. Let us know in the comments as well who you're picking and by how much, EJ. What's the final margin going to be for this one?
Tigers by 17.
Ooh, okay. I'll go Richmond by 15. Should be a cracking game, this one, and it's going to be really strange if we somehow pull off two wins in a row. Like, given that we've come from potentially not winning a game for an entire season to winning round one, to winning round six, and maybe winning round seven, it just seems totally unfathomable. But like I said, on our form line, we looked okay except for that last quarter. It would be very interesting. But yes, should be a big game. Is it meant to be raining? Do we know for Thursday night?
Talk about that yourselves.
That plays a part in selection too, I guess. If it's gonna, it's gonna pour with rain. What happens if we do win? We celebrate. We get the leather pants out and we celebrate accordingly, I reckon.
No, the rain isn't supposed to come until Friday.
Oh, okay. So it's not the okay. So a clear night, which is good for attending a football game, I guess. Change racing, Tigers by 20 goals. God damn. Well, that is, and this is what worries me, Andrew, a little bit as well, is the five-day break. Like, you just don't know how we're going to respond to that, both the older guys and the younger guys. Melbourne in a similar boat, though, so it won't be too dissimilar. But, that's just the really big unknown. So, we'll see how we go for this one. Looking forward to the big game. Make sure you get there early for the pre-match entertainment and the ceremony and things like that. It's always a really touching service. And other than that, we will be back on Monday, hopefully with another win under our belt. It's going to be a long time between shows, though, isn't it? It's going to feel ages.
Yeah, it is.
From the games. Usually we wrapped up by Sunday and back on Monday. But thanks for tuning in tonight, everybody. Much appreciated. Thanks for all the love and support. We're about to go record the video for the coach, for the Big Footy Tiger cast voting for the player of the year. And the exclusive news I can bring you is that Nick Vlosten did not pot out and get all five votes from all members of the voting panel.
What?
So I'll leave you with that one. So you can tune into the video when it gets posted tomorrow to see where the other votes landed. Yes. And yeah, you can see, you can put your thoughts and comments into that video. But have a good night, everybody. And we'll see you for the next week. Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.